Introduction. What if you could bring the creative environment of Saturday Night Live to your classroom? This book will give you specific strategies and resources that can be adapted to any subject to impact all of your students through humor. You'll learn how to use humor to grab your students' attention within the first 60 seconds and get full engagement until the bell goes. Effectively deal with the class clown and solve other classroom management problems without them stressing you out. Add humor to your class to build trust with your students, even if you don't see yourself standing up there like a comedian. Effortlessly tell a story with humor and connect it to your lesson, which enhances students' understanding of the content. Create an easygoing, creative, and fun learning environment. Apply simple, unconventional, student-centered resources your students will love, appreciate, and be inspired to learn. And you'll discover the humor in boring material. You'll also learn three resources to encourage humor through play, the number one strategy using humor to reach tactile learners. And this book is about teaching and what it means to impact teenagers' lives. It will help you shift from the sage on the stage to the guide on the side. Live from Your Class is three parts. The first two parts of the book provide real-world anecdotes, strategies, tips, tactics, and lesson ideas, some of which were inspired by my experiences in New York. The third part of the book offers humor-infused blank lesson plans, worksheets, videotape classroom examples, and links to simple, practical, project-based experiential lessons for every classroom. You can find these lesson plans in the resource section in the back of the book. Now, this book is for you if you ask yourself questions like, how can I become great at creating epic classroom environments in which my students are passionate about learning? What are some compelling ideas for my course this year? What are some real-world ideas I can use right now to develop intriguing and significant lessons? How do I help my students fulfill their creative potential? What's one new teaching strategy or approach that will re-energize my classroom this year? How can I get my most challenging students passionate about what I'm teaching? How can I enrich my students' lives so they'll be inspired to learn? And how do I ensure I don't feel burned out by February? This book will provide quick, useful tips interwoven with teaching stories. I structured the book this way to provide you with non-boring, entertaining professional development by someone like you, who knows the problems, challenges, and triumphs you go through every single day. These pages will illustrate how the stories from your life and your talents can merge to inspire your students even more than you already do. The first moment I decided to become a teacher was when I watched Robin Williams' performance as John Keating, the teacher in Dead Poets Society. I walked out of the theater as a teenager, feeling I wanted to have an impact on the lives of young people like he did. I aspired to be the kind of teacher who makes my students inspired to learn, read, create, and develop character. During a challenging teacher's college experience in which I contemplated quitting, I attended the late Frank McCourt's book reading of his teaching memoir, Teacher Man, at the University of Toronto's Hart House. McCourt described his role of a teacher as a drill sergeant, a rabbi, a shoulder to cry on, a disciplinarian, a singer, a low-level scholar, a clerk, a referee, a clown, a counselor, a dress code enforcer, a conductor, an apologist, a philosopher, a collaborator, a tap dancer, a politician, a therapist, a fool, a traffic cop, a priest, a mother, father, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, a bookkeeper, a critic, a psychologist, and the last straw. I saw value in pursuing this kind of career, and I modeled my own teaching style after Frank McCourt, John Keating in Dead Poets Society, and Jim Barry, my teaching mentor. Teaching is the means by which I have the opportunity to impact young women and men's lives each day. Writing about my experiences during my summers off is a way to share with other educators the lessons I've learned along my teaching journey. The story behind the story. I work for Broadway Video, the production company that produces Saturday Night Live, the Conan O'Brien Show, the Saturday Night Live film movies, and many more television shows and film specials. I held transient positions bouncing around from relatively insignificant jobs working for Lorne Michaels, the executive producer of Saturday Night Live and founder of Broadway Video. I had a unique perspective and distance as a fly-on-the-wall observer of this intriguing world. I learned valuable life lessons during my 3.5 years working on the periphery of TV comedy production, and I applied some of them to my teaching career. The stories in this book are as I remember them. I have changed certain names to respect the individuals involved. The lessons I learned from my experiences working in the world of TV and film production have made me a more creative, resourceful, and fun teacher. Read the chapters that best suit your needs. When you come across an idea that may work in your teaching environment, make a note of it for later. Reflect on your stories, travels, adventures, triumphs, and setbacks in life. What is your Saturday Night Live experience? It doesn't have to be flashy. In your mind, it may be an incident you dismiss as trite or obvious, but to your students, it could be an epiphany. What are the stories you find yourself telling over and over to your students? You can go directly to the resources for links, lessons, and media examples that may spark an idea for an upcoming unit. You can also access the end of each chapter for actionable summary steps. Discover how the stories of your life can engage your students and transform your classroom from engaged to epic, as my life experiences have done for me. Defining humor, a contextual prelude. The simplest definition of humor as it relates to teachers is the lighthearted, open, and playful quality and context that permeates a curiosity-driven creative learning environment. What is humor? It's important to define humor so that we are discussing the same topic within a particular framework. How do I define humor for the purposes of this book? How did I research the topic in context to the classroom? I was raised to believe that humor was something elusive. It was triggered by other people, often by surprise, at unexpected moments. It was a pleasant and welcome quality out of my control. I also believed humor was primarily about telling funny jokes, stand-up comedians, sitcoms, comic films, and shows like Saturday Night Live. It was my impersonations of the way my father stumbled upstairs at night after falling asleep on the family room couch downstairs, and my family's reaction, sometimes laughing until they cried. Before I began researching this book and drawing on my decade of teaching, I used to think that you could not deliberately create a classroom environment infused with humor. If it happens that a class laughs, it's like catching lightning in a bottle. It's a magic emotion that cannot be planned out moment to moment like a teacher's college lesson plan. From the earliest stages of my reflections on my classroom experiences, as well as my many books that I referenced on the topic, I realized that this is not how humor happens in a classroom. It emerged as one of the best measures of positive emotional engagement and connection I have with my students. It also showed me that humor in the framework I'm presenting here is not purely subjective. It is a uniting force that brings young people together and builds a bond between a teacher and his or her students. It is a means by which the majority of learners will respond favorably, regardless of their upbringing, biases, and personality type. I know the latter from my firsthand experience. I've had the opportunity to teach at a high school in an economically disadvantaged community in downtown Toronto, a university preparatory college in Malaysia, and a Jewish private school in Maple, Ontario. The one commonality is students are happier and more productive when they are laughing. The research in this book shows humor has health benefits too. It can be an emotional release with scientific data backing up that it's amongst the most beneficial stress relievers and a natural elixir. In The Science of Humor, Hungarian writer Laszlo Falecki said, "The greatest blessing of humor is that it relaxes tension. It is really indispensable in situations when there is nothing left but a big laugh. It is also a coping mechanism by which we can handle the hard truth. For what's real is often funnier than fiction." The comedians of the day are amongst our current culture's most trusted social commentators. In surveys, more young people get their news from humorists than journalists on the real-world news channels. Good old-fashioned humor turns on a surprising revelation of expectations that suddenly converges with what we know to be true. The result is disorienting, simultaneously showing the familiar and the strange. As New York Times columnist Lee Siegel writes in a Sunday edition piece, "Welcome to the Age of the Unfunny Joke." He goes on to say today's comedy is about telling the, quote, unadorned truth. Its context is comedic, but its content is anything but. I'm more interested in defining the context and creating conditions in which humor can flourish in a diverse range of classroom environments than in breaking down the content. The result is, when you're laughing, you're learning, as comedian and speaker Jack Milner said. I explore the quality and conditions of amusement and good-natured inclusive joy a teacher can deliberately create in a classroom in which meaningful humor can come to light. The results are a noticeable, tangible, and transformative shift in the individual student's frame of mind and the intellectual climate of the class as a whole. It can, and often will, create upbeat momentum, metamorphosizing the energy of a class. A significant reason for this is because, quote, all learning is state dependent, according to learning expert Jim Quick. It leads to students' increased receptivity to this serious lesson that lies beneath the amused smile. Humor is perspective. It is an insight into the needs of my students to find ways to lessen the burden of their day by creating spaces where wonder and big questions can flourish. Humor integrated into teaching is putting yourself out there. It is daring to be a little uncomfortable to try something new. It is about being vulnerable and brave. As a father, I can attest to Emerson saying, "Your actions speak so loud, I can't hear what you're saying." His epigram applies to the way young men and women size up if their teachers walk their talk. If you are enjoying the process, smiling and laughing, you will be learning along with your students. It will make them feel you understand them, and that making mistakes is an integral part of personal growth. If you delight in the journey, so will most of them at some point. The root of the word humor, as I learned from best-selling author Mark Bowden, comes from medieval times. Humorists were the old medics who thought there were four kinds of humor: blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile. These humors were necessary for the well-being of a person. The medic suggested if one or more of the humors are out of balance, then you'd be ill essentially. So you'd get into a humorous state to rebalance the humors. The satirist Fellecki related the term humor to an earlier historical period, indicating that it meant fluid or moisture, showing that already the Greeks must have known both moisture and humor. Humor as a fluid probably served to dilute the hard facts of life, making it possible to swallow and digest them. What I am not referring to with this term is telling jokes to get a laugh. Although some of the examples in this book, such as Abraham Lincoln's use of humor, often incorporated jokes. As a result, you will not find a list of jokes for which to open or close a class. I am also not alluding to entertaining students for the sake of entertainment. The kind of humor I show may be funny, but has a message or a point, even when it serves temporarily to distract and refocus an audience of teenagers. Humor, as discussed in this book, does not mean standing up in front of a group of high schoolers like a professional comic. Comedian Tom Rhodes said that most professional comedians are not funny by nature. He adds that some of his most moving moments on stage happen when he tells a story about his life that does not include laugh-out-loud jokes. Tom's revelation surprised me, but shows that it's not always appropriate to be funny. It's also not a term I will use often to describe the acts or the words that result in laughter, though it may provoke different shades of mostly cheerful emotions and reactions from your students. Humor in the context of the classroom focuses on elevating the state of mind of both the student and teacher to bring out their highest levels of effort and happiness. The struggle does not feel as daunting when sprinkled with a healthy dose of hilarity. Why would a teacher want to improve in this area? Comedian Ron Tite answers this question in context of public speaking, but it could equally apply to educators. If you can precede a serious topic and create some softness around it with some comedy and get the audience's guard down, it makes them a little more relaxed and open to hearing the message that will come next. You're there to deliver the content. The funny just happens and helps you deliver what you want people to walk away with. You're there to change people's lives, to change the decisions they make on a daily basis. And you have to use all the tools in your arsenal to do that. Humor and story are ways to do that. A theme throughout the book is that humor is a powerful strategy to get students invested emotionally in learning before teachers can teach them. Philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein said, "If people never did silly things, nothing intelligent would ever get done." There are chapters in this book in which I show you how starting with a silly thing can unite a class and make them malleable and open to diving into deep critical thinking. Humor is simply necessary to live a good life. Gandhi, Aung San Suu Kyi, Maya Angelou, Abraham Lincoln, Audrey Hepburn, and so many leaders of all times describe having a sense of humor as an armor for life's difficulties and essential for survival. It's in our hands to take care of ourselves for our emotional, psychological, and pedagogical well-being. Our students will be the benefactors. To revise author Mary Pettibone Poole's words, The teacher who laughs lasts. Prologue, live from New York. Jamie, Chris Farley nudged me. I looked up at Suri, who was giving me a look to hurry up and come in. Chris said, good luck and say hi to Sean for me. I will, I said. Suri, one of Lorne Michaels' assistants, held the door for me as I entered Lorne Michaels' Saturday Night Live office. The room felt like that of an Ivy League university president. It was filled with a mixture of elegant wooden shelves and walls that pictured Lorne with Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger, and even the President of the United States. And now, there Lorne and I were, alone in his office. He walked around his giant mahogany desk and shook my hand. Now I remember. You're from Toronto. Please have a seat, he said to me. He led me over to two chairs in the middle of the room that were just the perfect distance away for a conversation between two people who were meeting for the first time. There was no sense of superiority or condescension. I felt at ease the moment he stood up to meet me. I realized at that moment he was the kind of leader who didn't feel as if he had to prove himself. So how do you know Chris? He asked. I just met him. We were talking about a mutual friend, someone that we met in Toronto, one of your actors on Tommy Boy. Yes, you're from Toronto. Where did you grow up? I grew up in the Yonge and Finch area, but my dad grew up in Forest Hill. How is your father? He's good, I responded. Then I added, my father said you used to stop by his house with the other neighborhood kids, my grandmother's house, when you were 7. Her name is Becky Cohen. Ding. He raised his head slightly, a little like the Dr. Evil character in the Austin Powers movie series. It's not hard to think Mike Myers may have based Dr. Evil's voice and certain mannerisms on Lorne. I remember that name, Becky Cohen. I think my mother knew her. How's she doing? She's great. It felt good to make a personal connection with him. Now what, I thought. So what brings you here? He asked. I've always admired your work and how you've gotten where you are from where you were from. I've been working on a film in Toronto and developing my own documentary, and I wanted to ask your advice for an aspiring filmmaker. I love to read. I think we may have similar taste in books. Is that so? He asked. Yes. I heard you read Holocaust literature. Have you read the new memoir by Victor Klemperer, I Shall Bear Witness? No, what it's about? It's about a German-Jewish World War I veteran and a professor of French literature who kept a detailed journal of the slow methodical limits of his freedom after the election of the National Socialists. The memoir was found nearly 50 years after it was written. Right. This was a characteristic understated response from Lorne Michaels, as I would learn. One of my colleagues pitched his dream project to Lorne, whose sole response was, the more you're on TV, the more you're on TV. At that moment, there was a knock on the door. Suri came in and whispered something to Lorne. I'll be 5 more minutes, he told her. I assumed that she had been told to come in after a few minutes to keep the meeting short. So what film did you say you worked on? I worked for one of Canada's most successful film producers, Niamh Fishman, on his film called Last Night. He drew a blank stare. Who? I had made my first mistake. I tried too hard to impress him with a fact that was of no interest to him. I've never heard of him. What else has he done? He made a film called 32 Short Films about Glenn Gould. Oh, he said, without a slight change in his expression. It was at this moment I was reminded of why I was here. On the surface, it was to get some advice. I knew any guidance from him would be along the lines of keep trying, don't give up, do your projects, don't take no for an answer. I had read those types of statements from people in Lorne Michaels' sphere of power in the film world. However, the thought that came to my head was this was one of those pivotal moments that if I didn't seize, I would forever regret. So I was about to ask if I could come to New York and work for him, when suddenly he asked, so, would you like to work for one of my companies? My heart leapt into my mouth. Did Lorne Michaels just offer me a job? Suri knocked for a second time, and Lorne looked toward the door and said, 2 minutes. Sir? I started, but he cut me off. Call me Lorne. Okay, Lorne. I am willing to do anything. Sweep the floors, buy sushi for producers, whatever it takes. What I learned was to tell a potential mentor, you are willing to do any job necessary for the company. Talk your way into the internship with the individual whose job you aspire to hold, even if it's only for 2 weeks, just to prove you are invaluable to him or her. No. That's not necessary, he said. When are you leaving New York? The day after tomorrow. Right. Where would you like to work? Saturday Night Live, Conan O'Brien, Broadway Video Productions, or BBN? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Anything, sir. I'd be happy to work in any of your companies. Right. I'll set up a meeting with the head producers of Saturday Night Live, Conan O'Brien, and BBN, my new company. They'll see you tomorrow. Just get along with them. I can do that. Okay, good. As if on cue, Siri walked in and Lauren repeated to her what he had just told me. Set up meetings with Jim, Michael, Jack, and Christina tomorrow. Tell them to make time to see Jamie. Siri wrote this down, her eyebrows arching as she tried to control a disbelieving smile. Okay, she said, done. She looked at me. I got the cue. Never overstay your welcome, especially after a moment like this one. Lauren got out of his chair, shook my hand, then patted me on the shoulder. Give my best to Becky. And that was it. I walked out of the office and Siri treated me a little differently. Wow. I didn't see this coming. Another first. You're in. Is there a number I can reach you at? She asked. I gave her the number of a family friend where I was staying. I'll call you tonight and tell you where to go tomorrow for the first of your meetings. I never thought I'd say this, she said, but good for you. Thanks, I said. I met with five heads of various shows and departments. Each greeted me with respect and familiarity I hadn't earned, yet I received because I came through the boss. I ended up working in various parts of Lorne Michaels' empire, from Broadway Video to Saturday Night Live Films to BBN over the course of 4 years. I didn't know it at the time, but working for this comedy TV company would help me infuse joy and humor into students' lives who felt little hope for a better future. I remember one such instant when a grade 10 English student in a Toronto District School Board high school came late on many days. He would arrive disheveled and often wearing the same clothes. I wanted to help him, but didn't know how. I'd soon find out that he was a child survivor of the Sudanese genocide and had members who were murdered by the Janjaweed. One day during class, he arrived late. I was demonstrating a role play by putting myself in the shoes of a character in a short story. As the student shuffled past me, I turned to him and said, "Quick, Jacob, I need a jacket." He stopped and glared at me from the back of the room where he usually sat. "Yeah, I need your jacket." He reluctantly took it off and handed it to me. It was five sizes too big for me as he stood at 6'3". I looked ridiculous. The whole class laughed, including Jacob for the first time. I asked him to join me in my role play in front of his classmates. He did. After the class, he said it was the first time since he arrived from Sudan that a teacher had taken an interest in him. His marks slowly improved as he stayed during lunch and after school, making gradual progression in his reading comprehension and writing. Along the way, my radar was up for light moments to bring a smile to Jacob and the other students, many of whom had also come from war-torn countries like Afghanistan and the Congo. If you're laughing, you're learning. You don't have to be a professional comedian or think of yourself as a funny person to find moments of humor in a situation and be able to laugh at yourself in front of your students. On the last day of class, Jacob said to me, "When I came into your class, I was dead inside. After your teaching, I feel alive." I have Lorne Michaels to thank for putting me in an environment where I realized how comedy can heal and build emotional, powerful connections with people. I saw this firsthand after 9/11. Having worked at SNL in New York helped me learn to create a classroom where both my students and I can't wait to get up each morning to attend.